Produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. Canada welcomes Formula One on North American soil. Sprint Cup brings their show to the Irish hills of Michigan. IndyCar gave Texas the old college try. Dirt racing had some big events with Eldora's Dream for Late Models and USAC's Eastern Storm. All this and more. Welcome to Speedway Report for Monday, June 13th, 2016, from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds, and thank you for joining us tonight. From the North Myrtle Beach ZRN Studios, producer Jeff Gilder is with us. Jeff loves the racetrack on Saturday nights, the smell of hot tires and burned race fuel. And that's just in his hot dogs. How are you, Daddy Jay?
Yeah, man, don't leave out the smell of hot rear-end grease.
Oh, that stuff's gross, man. I can take race fuel, but not the burned rear ends, man. It's different. No.
Oh, God.
Now you're just being silly.
Yeah.
I throw a little dirt in your hot dog because hopefully Jerry Smith might still be tuning in and we could give him the business one more time about the dirt track versus the paved track.
Do you think we've shamed him enough to where he's going to start covering more dirt races now?
It sounded tonight like he did. I was listening to Stars Radio. If you're unfamiliar with the show, 6 to 7 p.m. right before us every Monday night, Short Track Auto Racing Source. Yeah, you can get in the business pretty good. I was listening. I'm a big fan. Heck yeah, dirt, man. Dirt.
He's one of those candy asphalt guys.
Yeah, the candy asphalt. Not that I mind a pavement race either, but I like that term. That's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, pavement's for getting there and dirt's for racing, some people say.
That's what they say. Yeah.
I
go for it, man. I did a little of both, but I'd love me some dirt racing, man. There's nothing like it.
I tried both as well. Yep, I drove on dirt and pavement, and as unsuccessful as I was on dirt, I didn't have a clue on pavement. I didn't know what I was doing. I changed everything on a paved car a few times, and I just went out and I had years of dirt experience. And I never won on dirt, but when I would change the car, I could go out and I would feel the changes. And pavement, I'd throw the kitchen sink at the car, I'd take it out there, I still couldn't feel anything. I didn't know what the heck I was doing on it.
I can relate exactly to that, and I probably would still be doing that if it hadn't been for Paul Lewis. But I was very fortunate that my first night out on pavement, he was there and said, "Let me help," and he helped me figure it out really quickly, man.
He helped you figure out to start a radio network instead of race car driving?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
I did the same thing. I stayed involved in racing, obviously, still am, but yeah, the driving career, you kind of get a clue after a season or two. Maybe this isn't as easy as it looks as on TV.
Well, it's, you know, the thing about it is people take, I mean, too easily knowledge and experience, you know, and what that really means. You take a guy like Paul who raced pavement for years, he raced dirt too, but he raced pavement for years and years and years, and he watched my car and told me what I needed to do to it. Hell, I was driving it trying to feel it and didn't know what to do to it, you know?
Yep. I saw a little homemade video or even some photographs of my car in a corner on a dirt track, and sometimes that told me more than what I was feeling in the race car. Yep. It's just a different view out that windshield than it is from the outside.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
That's why all those fans in the race, you know, in the grandstands, they they would have won every race from grandstands. They all do. Yeah.
Yep.
So can you believe, I'll jump to this for one moment. Last Friday, can you believe, well, you remember my daughter, Colleen, little, mm-hmm. tiny little redhead?
Yeah.
She's now a middle schooler.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, she graduated elementary school last week.
Holy cow.
Yeah, huh?
Mm-mm-mm.
Which begs the question, for speaking of little redheads, how's Eli?
He's doing all right, man. He's
good.
Hanging out with Big D, loving it.
Good. Yep. Good, good. Yeah. Awesome. He having a good time down at the beach, ready for a big summer down there, directing tourists on where to go?
Yep. Yeah, he is. He, you know, they're shooting a lot of golf course video right now, and Eli's loving that. I mean, they're getting to the point now to where they're going around to some of the courses a second and third time, and he knows all the people, the head pros and things, and he just loves it.
Hmm. Yeah, he seems to have a little showman in him, like the rest of us here at the.
Oh, he does, yeah. And he played his first full 18-hole round a couple weeks ago with us, and we didn't expect him to make it, you know, the full 18. He asked us. He says, "Are we going to play them all?" And I said, "Yeah, we're going to play them all." And we finished up 18. And he says, "Do we have to quit now?"
A golfer and a showman. Yeah, he did not far fall from the Gilder family tree.
Yeah, absolutely. But he really enjoys it. That's cool. It's cool watching him, too.
Mm. It's a Big D's 401k right there.
Yep, that's it.
Strokes knocked off his game.
Yep.
Darn right. Well, Bud, it is good to hear from you once again on a Monday. Thank you very much for bringing us to life here at Speedway Report. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Always a pleasure to see our friends at the RacersReunion.com pages joining us with the chat rooms we have at Drag Racing Reunion. Barb is over there along with Larry Clayton. Jeff and I are signed in over there. A little full crowd going on the stock car site. Danny is there. Hello, Mr. Whitener. Dangerous Devin is with us. Eric is with us. Larry, myself, Stars Radio, Jerry Smith is still there. And the legend, Tim Leeming, has joined us. What's a Monday without the legend? It's lacking something. But we got it tonight, Tim Leeming. So if you want to do a little bench racing, head over to racersreunion.com. Sign into either the drag racing site or the stock car site. Bench race away. We got a couple of chat rooms going. And as always, say hello to our friend Leo, listening live in Brazil. He may be listening to the podcast when he finally gets a hold of it, but a steady listener every week. Thank you, Leo. God bless you. Happy to have you on board, as well as we're happy all of you are here. Coming up tonight on Speedway Report are your phone calls. A little bit later in the show, we'll let you know when the phone lines are open. We have a Facebook page for the show, Speedway Report. Give us a like. On Twitter, my two handles are Speedway Pat. And the show title has its own Twitter handle, Speedway Report. Coming up as our special guest tonight is a driver, I think, who fits well with the original idea of Racers Reunion Radio. We will visit with a pioneer, a barrier breaker, and someone who paved the way for many drivers today. The legendary Janet Guthrie joins us very shortly. So I'm asking you a little bit later, if you want to give us a call, please do. We'll open up the phone lines for Trevor Bayne fans or Jimmy Johnson fans, whichever side you want to take. Or if there's any IndyCar fans down in Fort Worth still hoping for a race today, or if you've just got a track to go to or something's on your mind, hey, we would love to hear from you. Let's jump on over to the Speedway Report Victory Lane lap right now and tell you who won what. What a busy weekend this was. As we get into not the dog days of summer, that's a little later, but we've cleared Memorial Day, we're into June, the temperature's up, so are a lot of racing laps. The Sprint Cup cars were in Michigan yesterday afternoon. Joe Logano led 139 of the 200 laps in winning the Michigan 400 yesterday. Chase Elliott continued his strong rookie season with a second-place finish. Kyle Larson finished third, but his car failed post-race inspection. It was taken to NASCAR R&D facility down the road from where we are. Details on the violation and penalties will be announced later this week, if any. Fourth and fifth were Brad Keselowski and Kevin Harvick. The Xfinity cars were in Michigan on Saturday. Daniel Suarez won a dandy. He passed Kyle Busch on the next-to-last lap to win his first series race. He became the first Mexican-born driver to win a NASCAR National Series event. Paul Menard was third. Eric Jones was fourth, who is driving with a heavy heart as he lost his father last week after a short battle with cancer. Elliott Sadler was fifth in the race. The NASCAR trucks were in Texas on Friday night. Teenager William Byron passed Matt Crafton on a late race restart to win his second race of the year. Crafton trailed in second. Third through fifth were Johnny Sauter, Ben Kennedy, and Tyler Reddick. The NASCAR K&N Pro Series West Tour was at the Colorado National Speedway, where Chris Eggleston won the race out there. The rest of your top five: Todd Gilliland, Grayson Rise, Ryan Partridge, and Blaine Perkins. IndyCar race, I'd like to talk about this a little bit later if we get the chance, but this is kind of weird to me. I'll give you the highlights here. They were in Fort Worth, Texas, as the premier event over the weekend, scheduled for Saturday night. 600-kilometer, 248-lap race. It was rained out on Saturday and postponed until Sunday afternoon. That race green was still delayed by track drying. They finally did start later than they planned. The field only completed 71 laps when the rains returned. The event is now suspended until August 27th when they will complete it. James Hinchcliffe is the current leader. In Formula One, love North American soil. I don't got to get up at 6 a.m. to catch the F1 cars. They were to our neighbors to the north in Canada. Lewis Hamilton led the way for Mercedes, about 5 seconds ahead of Sebastian Vettel's Ferrari. Vettel's two-stop strategy proved to be short of Hamilton's one-stop strategy. Valtteri Bottas and Williams completed the podium. Fourth and fifth were Max Verstappen and Nico Rosberg. Winners yesterday in Englishtown, New Jersey, with the NHRA held their Summer Nationals. And Top Fuel, Steve Torrance was your winner. Ron Capps won Funny Car. Greg Anderson took Pro Stock. And Angel Sampi took Pro Stock Motorcycle. That was her first win since 2007. World of Outlaw Sprint Cars were, as usual, in the Midwest. Last Wednesday night, they raced in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. Donnie Schatz won the A-Main. Over David Gravel, Darren Pittman, Jason Sides, and Jason Johnson. The tour then ran a doubleheader in Knoxville, Iowa on Friday and Saturday. Friday night's race was won by Terry McCarl over Schatz, Brian Brown, Dusty Zomer, and Gravel. And on Saturday, Schatz comes back to win again. Good week for him. Daniel Osaski was second over Gravel, Jamie Veal, and Brad Sweet. The ARCA Tour ran Friday in Michigan. They had a nice triple header at the Michigan International Speedway. Former guest right here on our show, Brandon Jones, was the winner. Chase Briscoe was second, followed by Kyle Benjamin, Travis Braden, and Matt Tift. The USAC Silver Crown cars were up in Williams Grove, Pennsylvania, where Chris Windham won the big cars return to the track for the first time in 35 years. Brian Clausen, Cody Swanson, Brady Bacon, and Justin Grant rounded out the top five. Now, that Silver Crown race was shoved in between a week-long race series for USAC Sprint Cars called the Eastern Storm. On Tuesday night, they ran in Grandview, Pennsylvania, where Brian Clausen was your winner. On Wednesday night at Lincoln Speedway, Clausen went 2-for-2 in the sprints. Thursday night in New Egypt, New Jersey, Chad Blosflug took the win. They ran the Silver Crown race at Williams Grove on Friday. On Saturday, the sprints returned at Port Royal, where Clausen won again. And last night, Chris Windham was your winner. And as you would expect, Clausen is the 2016 Eastern Storm champion. We've got a few more results to get to, but I want to put the caution flag right out, pick up the pace car. We'll slide in our first commercial break right here, right now. And on the other side, we're going to talk to one of the legends of motorsports, a barrier breaker, and a definite pioneer in auto racing. Miss Janet Guthrie will join us. We'll be right back.
you're looking to play some golf in the Myrtle Beach area, just call Dave at the Golf Director, 844-GO-GOLF-1. That's 844-464-6531. Just call Dave. Dave can get you on the course with the best rates on the Grand Strand. Just call Dave. If you're a little shy and you don't like talking on the phone, just chat with Dave. Go to thegolfdirector.com in the lower right-hand corner, click chat. In a few seconds, you're going to be chatting live with Dave. Dave has some of the best golf packages offered anywhere. Just call Dave. 844-GO-GOLF-1. That's 844-464-6531. Tell your friends to tweet at the Golf Director. Hashtag Just Call Dave. 844-GO-GOLF-1. Just call Dave at the Golf Director.
Jack City USA and Beach Music Scene Magazine are proud to welcome Ginger Jewelry to our family. Check them out on the inside front cover of the latest edition of Beach Music Scene Magazine, or go to their website at www.gingerjewelry.net. That's Ginger, J-I-N-J-A, gingerjewelry.net. Check out this fantastic selection of handcrafted Balinese jewelry. That's Ginger Jewelry, gingerjewelry.net.
Reynolds, thanks for being along for the ride tonight. May I welcome to Speedway Report, an auto racing pioneer that broke barriers and helped shape the racing that we see today. Janet Guthrie joins us. How are you tonight, Janet?
Oh, very well, Patrick. Glad to be with you.
Well, thank you for coming on the show tonight. Appreciate the time. How are things out in Colorado, where you make your home?
Well, a little rainy this afternoon, but at least it's finally warming up.
We could send you some heat out here. We were pushing triple digits all weekend here near
Whoa.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Bring the suntan lotion.
I grew up in Miami, so I was sort of used to it. I sometimes thought that growing up accustomed to heat helped me drive those stalkers in those high temperatures when, Cale Yarborough, if he didn't have his cool hat working, he was in big trouble.
Did you find, not just the stock cars, but auto racing in general, did you find it was a highly physical sport and that you had to put a lot of extra effort into your physical conditioning to be competitive?
Well, not too many people had professional trainers back then. I mean, mm-hmm. for one thing, we didn't have that kind of money. But I was always pretty lean and wiry, and had built up my muscles basically doing curls with a 7-main bearing Jaguar crankshaft, building my own engines. So strength was really never an issue, and thank goodness heat was not much of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Back in your early days, probably all through your career, at least you had some input on it, but very early on, before we saw you on the major stages of Daytona and Indianapolis when you were road racing, you did. You built, maintained, and did you own your own cars? Was it your entire operation?
And most of those 13 years, most of the cars I drove were ones I owned. First, my XK140 Jaguar, the one I was referring to, 6 cylinders and 7 main bearings. That was a beautiful engine. I learned how to rebuild it basically by reading the shop manual. I knew nothing about engines when I started.
Well, you do have an engineering degree from the University of Michigan. You say you grew up
physics,
in Miami.
Physics,
yeah.
Actually.
That must have helped you. Like, when you went to read the manual, that must have given you an edge. It's like, you don't know anything, okay. You opened up and read it. It must not have been very foreign to you. You must have grasped it somewhat quickly.
Well, not really. I guess I was too stupid to know any better. I made a huge mistake in one of my early engines. I bought cast pistons instead of forged pistons, and they naturally they came apart almost immediately. So that was a difficult learning experience.
Expensive too, I imagine.
But I was so happy when I finally got my chance at the big time and had genuine professional mechanics that did that work. I loved it.
Did that make a huge difference when you could stop worrying about getting under the hood and turning the wrenches yourself and you could just focus on the driving? There were just more people to support a race program?
Yes, I really never enjoyed doing the work myself. It was just that it was necessary to do it in order to get to the next race because I wasn't born with a trust fund or anything.
Right.
And I fell in love with the sport really hard, and whatever it took to get to the next race, I would do it.
How did you fall in love with the sport really hard? That's one of my favorite questions to ask a guest is, how did the racing bug first bite you?
Well, I usually say I was born adventurous and grew up insufficiently socialized. I made a parachute jump when I was 16. I had a private pilot's license at 17, a commercial and flight instructors by the time I got out of college. I just loved adventure. And, of course, with this beautiful machinery, broad shoulders and big muscles didn't make any difference.
Right.
I went to work on Long Island outside of New York City after I got out of college as a research and development engineer at Republic Aviation. And I almost bought an AT-6, a World War II training plane that was stressed for 6Gs positive and 6Gs negative. You could do all sorts of wonderful tricks with that airplane. But outside of New York City, there was no place to go and have fun. So instead, I bought a Jaguar XK120 coupe, 7 years old, and that was the big watershed.
Was the Jaguar a race car, or was it a street legal machine that you could run in racing events?
Well, I bought it simply because it was beautiful, and it was the car that I drove to work every day. And no, it wasn't a race car. The Jaguar coupe was 500 pounds heavier than the Roadster. I cut my teeth with that XK120 coupe. I ran what they now call solo competitions and then hill climbs. And the faster I went, the better I liked it. So I bought a Jaguar XK140 Roadster that had been prepared for competition.
So with the Jaguar, is that what you, I guess, made the step to SCCA in road racing? Did you use that car to make that step into road racing?
Yes, I did. I took it to SCCA Driver's School in Maryland in the spring of 1963. I ran a few races that year. Over the winter, I tore the engine apart and rebuilt it and spiffed up some damage the previous owner had incurred and debuted it in 1964 as a really good-looking race car at the first ever 500-mile race at Watkins Glen and finished sixth overall against Corvettes and Cobras and all sorts of things.
You have some starts at Daytona's 24 Hours and Sebring's 12 Hours as well, the two biggest North American endurance races. Was that 500 miler at Watkins Glen at the same time that you got, you know, in the same seasons that you were able to run Daytona and Sebring?
No. My first shot at the Daytona 24 Hour came in 1966, so I had three seasons under my belt by then. And my first shot at the Sebring 12-hour was in 67.
What did you like most about road racing?
Well, It's a very complicated question. First of all, you're doing your darndest to get ahead of the other driver, but you must not touch them or do them any harm. It's an interesting combination. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's the speed and getting through the turns as fast as that car will possibly go, which is always the great attraction of racing of any sort, and hopefully getting ahead of the other driver in the process.
Mm-hmm. So your road racing and your career is moving along fine. What came first? Was it the chance to get in an Indy car or a NASCAR Grand National car?
Well, I had been at that point racing in SCCA and Daytona and Sebring and whatnot for right. 13 years, and I was really quite at the end of my rope. I had dropped out of my job in physics, and my race car was pretty well used up, and I had no savings, no house, no jewelry, no insurance. No,
sound like a racer.
And I was saying to myself, you know, you really must come to your senses and make some provision for your old age. And at that point, a guy I had never heard of, Rolla Volstead, mm-hmm. called me. He got my answering machine because I was out at the shop working on the car. And before, he said, how would you like to take a shot at Indianapolis? And I thought to myself, oh, yeah, sure, certainly, another joker. But
yeah.
Before I returned the call, I called Chris Economaki, the great guru of National
sure.
Speed Sport News, because he knew everything and everyone. And I said, Chris, who is Rolla Volstead? And Rolla was real. He was a longtime team owner who had always been an innovator. And so the next morning I returned his call and things went on from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did they go on from there? Was your next step to get to the Speedway, or did you test or run some other races? That timeline, how did that follow?
Well, actually, I made that a condition of my deal with Rolla. I said, before you make any noise about this, we must run a test in privacy. No
mm-hmm.
news stuff, no nothing. And if I like you and you like me and the car goes fast enough and I can make the car go fast enough, then you can make all the noise about it you feel like you have to. And Rolla said he didn't know if his sponsor would be willing to pay for that, but I said, well, nevertheless, that's my condition. And the sponsor did pay for the test, and the test went well, and we went on from there.
And was the next stop the attempting to qualify for the 500 for the first time?
No. The next thing that happened after the sponsor was on board and all that, and the test had been successful, was that the sponsor held a press conference, which was my first acquaintance with the hullabaloo that this was going to arouse.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, I was astonished. I mean, I'd been racing 13 years, and yeah, I was a woman, so what?
Sure.
Well, I wasn't acquainted with oval track racing.
Mm-hmm. So what was next after that? You tested, went well, press conference, now
I
on track. Where do you go?
Drove the IndyCar race at Trenton. I scheduled for 2 weeks before Indianapolis opened for practice, but was rained out that weekend, so the my first IndyCar race was 1 week before Indianapolis opened for practice, and it was successful. The car broke. Let's see what happened. I think the transaxle broke, if I remember right, but up until that point, I was definitely holding my own.
Mm-hmm. I've been to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway several times, but as a writer, broadcaster, go up there, and just from my point of view, I'm in awe of that facility and the history and all that it means to motorsports. Tell me how you felt going up there for the first time as a driver attempting to get into the 500.
Oh, my goodness. It
That's about right. Yep.
Big leap. And, of course, those were the days when 400,000 people would show up for pole day,
right.
And it was really something. And of course, you could see the overlay of all those ghosts reaching back to 1911, and it was definitely impressive. Excuse me, I remember sitting there in the car, getting ready to go out on the track for the first time and saying to myself, now remember, it's just like Trenton, only bigger. And then myself said back, what are you kidding me? This is Indianapolis.
It certainly is a special place. What year was this that you went there for your first time?
76.
Okay. But I believe you didn't make it, and your first time in the 500 was 77. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The car I had was a car that Tom Bigelow, the all-time great sprint car driver, had not been able to put into the field the previous year. And mm-hmm. although Tom told me the car had been improved, no more could I put it in the field in 76. But the interesting thing that happened was Ralph Alstead, whom I really honor and admire to this day, at the very last minute, took a step I think that is unheard of for a team owner. He went to Leo Mell, the great good guy of Goodyear,
yep.
and asked Leo to see if he could find a car for me that would be capable of making the field, a car that would not be Rolla's. And I think that was really an extraordinary move. Mm. And Leo did find A.J. Foyt, and A.J. Foyt let me take his backup car in practice. And, of course, I ran that fast enough to make the field, but A.J. decided not to let me make a qualifying attempt with it, so I had to wait for the next year.
Mm-hmm. And when you and I met face-to-face, like I said to you earlier, you've met so many people over the Indianapolis weekend. I was at the Auto Racing Hall of Fame dinner the Thursday before the 500, and you told a very funny story about 1977. It was a good quip. As Rick Mears was being honored in 1977, that was your first attempt. However, what about Mr. Mears that year?
Oh, well, there's a
I thought
long
this was
story
funny.
Behind that, and I'm glad people laughed when I said, first of all, I congratulated him on his four
Absolutely.
Victories, which he got driving for Roger Penske, of course, and he met Roger Penske on Wally Dallenbach's famous motorcycle ride, No Women mm-hmm. Allowed, of course, Penske gave him a shot with his team. So I began by congratulating Rick on his four victories, and then I said I had read recently something I'd forgotten, that that first year that I made the field, 1977, Rick Mears didn't.
Yeah.
I said, something to do with cars and teams, I believe. And then mm-hmm. I handed the mic to Derek Daly.
Yeah. I think your joke got the biggest laugh out of the audience that night. It was... Very funny. The following year, you did wonderful finish. You made the race again. Ninth place. You were not physically 100% for that 500-mile event in 1978 with a good finish. Tell us what happened.
Oh, a lot happened. The best I figured I could do with that car, which was a... actually built for road racing circuits and which had caused Wally Dallenbach, the previous year's driver of it, to leave the speedway rather than drive it. I talked to Wally before I agreed to buy it. That was the year I ran my own team, and Wally told me that the car had been improved. But in any case, the best I figured I could do with that car was fifth, if everything went well. Well, mm-hmm. let's see. Among other things, I
Put
fractured
on the list.
My wrist a few days before the race and had to conceal that from the track physician, who was about 110 years old and who undoubtedly would have forbidden me to drive. The vent for the fuel tank was plugged, and our fuel stops took absolutely forever. That was probably the single worst problem. And then the car had been built for Gordon Johncock, who mm-hmm. has legs that are much shorter than mine. And even though they moved the pedal assembly all the way down into the nose and even cut holes in the dashboard for my knees to stick up into, it was still too short for me. And my right foot started going numb about halfway through the race. So I would have to go down the straightaway holding the accelerator pedal down with the arch of my foot. And back in those days, you still had to lift for the turns a little bit. Mm-hmm. That was part of what made it interesting. As I approached the turns, I'd slide the ball of my foot back onto the accelerator pedal so I had the necessary sensitivity to lift just a hair for the turns. So there were a number of things that made life difficult in that race. So instead of a fifth, I got a ninth, and I said, mm-hmm. well, I'll take it.
Still remembered today as a great drive up at the Speedway. In between these years, at this time, you were also made your first NASCAR start in between all of this. Tell me about that.
Well, that happened because in Charlotte, Humpy Wheeler, the great promoter, was running his first Charlotte 600-mile NASCAR Cup race, and he was getting annoyed because all the headlines were about my adventures in Indianapolis instead of about his race.
Right.
So when my ride started looking a little shaky, Humpy set things in motion that might bring me to Charlotte for the Charlotte, at that time it was called the World 600, mm-hmm. NASCAR Cup race, at that time Winston Cup. And I didn't want to know about it, not until my shot at Indianapolis was over and done with. But Rollo Volstead, again, extraordinary for a team owner, kept his finger on the pulse of it. And the morning after that last day of qualifying, when I had run AJ's car and gone fast enough and then wasn't able to make a qualifying attempt with it and so on, that Monday morning, representatives from Charlotte, including the new team owner, Linda Ferrari, and I and Rolla sat down to breakfast, and that evening, away I went for Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. How did you do?
Oh, that too was funny. I told the story in my book. I wrote a book that was published a few years ago, and any of your readers who are interested can get it by going to my website, and I'll send them an autographed copy. It's on a page called, I think it's on the page called Contact Us, says how to purchase a copy there. In any event, it's just JanetGuthrie.com. It's very simple. Everyone was saying I'd never make the field unless NASCAR monkeyed with the qualifying times. So when I qualified, I think there were 100 people in the infield with stopwatches on me. Well, I did qualify. I qualified right behind, in the row right behind, Dale Earnhardt Sr. and Bill Elliott. Mm-hmm. And I finished in front of both of them, but mainly because they broke. I can't say I beat them. And I didn't know the cars, of course, so I didn't know who I was passing. But I ended up finishing 15th and got the Curtis Turner Award, and that was what started the NASCAR racing.
Mm-hmm. You raced both NASCAR and Indy cars. Were you, I guess for lack of a better term to ask you, were you forced to make a decision to lean one way or another during that time, or were you able to juggle both, so to speak?
Well, again, a complicated story. My only full year of racing was 1977. And there were some NASCAR races in the first half of the year that I wanted to drive in but could not because of USAC's licensing rules. And Rolla still didn't have very much money, but Linda Ferrari had gotten sponsorship from Kelly Services, the temporary office help firm, and I could run as many NASCAR races as I was able to. And so in July, I gave up my USAC license because I could run the remaining IndyCar races on my international license, my FIA license.
Mm-hmm.
So the second half of the year, I ran whatever USAC races, IndyCar races, Rolla had in mind for me, because my first obligation was to him. But apart from that, I ran all the NASCAR races that I could. It worked out to 19 out of a possible 33 races that year.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good. While you just mentioned it, I did pull up your website. I let my audience members know it's JanetGuthrie.com. And the book, A Life at Full Throttle, it's actually even easier than that, Janet. It's right on the front page, right on the home page of your website. There's a cover of the book, picture of the book jacket. They can click on that, and our audience can order it. So I look forward to reading that as well.
I wasn't ghosted. I did write it myself. Get up in the morning, and I would take an X-Acto knife and make a little slit in my left wrist and dip in the quill and begin.
Yeah, I've written some nights like that myself when it is about like slitting your wrist. I've gotten a lot of questions from my audience members in the past week or so when they heard that you're going to be on the show. One of the most common questions I have been asked is, oh my goodness, Janet Guthrie, what is she doing now? So I ask you, what are you up to? How do you spend your time?
Oh, well, not an awful lot. Recently I've been preoccupied with family estate matters. Both my parents are gone now, but the family properties in Florida haven't been sold yet, and it's very complex and very taxing. I do have four brothers and sisters. My brother is the executor, but anyone who has been through these things knows it's very difficult emotionally as much as anything else.
Well, Janet, I know we promised you a shorter segment when we talked earlier, but I found yourself so darn interesting that I could keep going over and run my time over and into the next show because I could listen to you talk all night. I thought this was fascinating. But unfortunately, this is where I have to drop the checkered flag on this segment. It was an honor meeting you a few weeks ago in Indianapolis. It was a privilege speaking with you tonight. Thank you for paving the way for so much that we see today in auto racing because of you. You broke some barriers. You're a pioneer. And I appreciate your time tonight for coming on Speedway Report. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Janet. Have a great evening. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Janet Guthrie, everyone, a barrier breaker, motorsports pioneer, the foundation of many people, just like here at Racers Reunion Radio. Time for another break right now. When we return, we'll cover more of your Speedway Report headlines, finish up the victory lane lap, and if we got some time, we'll see if we can sneak in a quick phone call. You are listening to Speedway Report. I'm Patrick Reynolds. We will be back right after this.
Now that we're finished bragging about the guest list, here's your host, Patrick Reynolds.
Bimini Jimmy's Oyster Bar and Seafood Cafe has been serving nothing but the freshest shellfish and fish since 1985, beginning with the original location in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and now including an inland location in Greenville, South Carolina. A local's favorite, Bimini's offers live entertainment in season in a year-round vacation atmosphere. Take a trip to the islands inland. Bimini's Oyster Bar, where there are no bad days. Check out the events calendar on the website at www.bimini'soysterbar.com or click the banner here on Shack City, USA.
Shack City, USA and Beach Music Scene Magazine are proud to welcome Ginger Jewelry to our family. Check them out on the inside front cover of the latest edition of Beach Music Scene Magazine or go to their website at www.gingerjewelry.net. That's Ginger, J-I-N-J-A, gingerjewelry.net. Check out this fantastic selection of handcrafted Balinese jewelry. That's Ginger Jewelry, gingerjewelry.net.
Welcome back to Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds. Thanks for tuning in tonight. We appreciate all of you being along for the ride. How cool was that? Chatting with Janet Guthrie for the last, 20 or 30 minutes, whatever we did. Her and I spoke this afternoon, and she said, hey, how long's the segment going to be? I said, well, 15, 20 minutes. I can flex that any way you like. If you need to get somewhere, to shorten it up, I can do that. If you got time to stay, we'll talk. And she said, oh, no, I've got nothing else going on. So I could have gone all night, but we've got to sign off here shortly, and there are a few other things I did want to get to tonight. That just may be a case of me needing her back on the show. Fantastic. And if you, what we talked about it earlier in the show on racersreunion.com, if you go to the stock car site or the drag site, there's chat rooms going in. And on the stock car site, if you missed it, there's a great photo there of Janet and our own none other the legend, Tim Leeming, together. And as the legend put it, he's guessing right around Firecracker 400 of 1974. Tim and Janet are hanging out together. So check that out. I tell you, racersreunion.com. Go to the stock car site, and in the chat room there is this great photo and the thread. Fantastic stuff there. Back to the victory lane lap. We've got a few more results we want to get to. Tell you about this busy weekend. In Grandview, Pennsylvania, they've had a lot of rainouts. They got in the show Saturday night. The 30-lap small block modified feature was won by Brett Cressley. Late models won by Drew Weiser, and Sportsman Race was won by Brian Pappas. The Bowman Gray Stadium, the legendary Madhouse here in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, just up the road from us. The 100-lap modified feature was won by the Rocket Man, Tim Brown. The Cars Tour was just down the road from them in Hudson, North Carolina on Friday night. The Super Late Model 100 was won by Cole Tim, and the Late Model Stock Car 100 was won by Josh Berry. One of the biggest races in the dirt late model year at Eldora Speedway this past weekend, the Dream. Thursday's Twin 25s were split by Brandon Shepard and Jonathan Davenport. Friday's races, the preliminary features there, were won by Shepard again in a repeat, and Jared Landers. They all split the Twin 25s. Saturday's main event, the Dream 100 and $100,000, were won by Dennis Erb Jr. in his first Crown Jewel win. Congratulations to him. The rest of the top five were Kid Rocket, Josh Richards, Dale McDowell, Davenport, and Don O'Neill. The Tri-Track Series for Pavement Modifieds was scheduled to be at Monadnock, New Hampshire on Saturday. Unfortunately, they were rained out. Still working on a makeup date for them. A little bit news to talk about over the weekend. Well, a bunch of stuff, but we'll make sure we cram it into the time frame here. First thing I want to kick around here is this postponement that I mentioned earlier for the IndyCars down in Fort Worth, Texas. Quite perplexing how they put this deal together down there and the postponement and the dates they chose. Race was scheduled for Saturday night, got rained out, pushed to Sunday afternoon. They have the same rules there as NASCAR. We have to hit halfway in the race before it is deemed official. Rains came again Sunday afternoon, well before halfway. So the race is not official. They still need to complete it. A couple of things that you look at here. They didn't schedule to throw the green flag for this thing till about 2:15, 2:10 or so Eastern Standard Time, which would have been 1 o'clock local time. Without going into deep and looking at the details of the weather of the race, could they have done a 10 a.m. or an 11 a.m. start on a Sunday? Sometimes NASCAR will do that when they go to Mondays. They'll go to a very early start in an attempt to get the race in and then get everybody back on their way home. And when it came to the green flag here, it wasn't till I think it was about 3 o'clock Eastern time when this race finally went green because of the weepers in the track. The sun came out, the track heated up, the rainwater that had accumulated there started coming through the pavement. So they threw the green a little bit late, and then the rains came again. Now, the forecast was for Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, a lot of thunder, a lot of lightning. I understand that. Should they have put this till Monday? The reason they didn't, or several fold, they've got a big test coming Wednesday at Road America, this week is full of testing for most of the teams, as well as a couple of their star drivers. I believe Scott Dixon, being one of them, has to head to Le Mans for the 24-hour race this weekend. Matter of fact, you have to be in Le Mans this past weekend for scrutineering in order to be eligible to race this upcoming weekend in the 24 hours. The IndyCar drivers that were scheduled to race got special exemptions, so they didn't have to be there. However, it just seems like IndyCar is making concessions for testing and for drivers racing in other series. The primary concern of any race organization is to be their own races and their own series. I'm trying to think of the hardships that the fans have gone through trying to see this race. Okay, the drivers could not come back Monday or Tuesday. They were busy. What about the fans, huh? They got a better shot at them being there on a Monday than they do coming back in August, which they may not be able to do if they've traveled a long way to get to the track. I think IndyCar tried to make concessions for people other than the most important ones, and that is the fans. Not going all the details, I don't know, so I could be speaking out of turn here, but I believe a better decision could be made. I would have stuck it out and tried to get that race in. IndyCar Series has to take care of IndyCar Series and take care of IndyCar fans before they worry about Le Mans or a test. You need to take care of your races first. In between our broadcasts, please keep up on the world of auto racing with our website, SpeedwayReport.com. We have columns, anyway, from Vicki Miller, Paul Bloffus, and Steve Zonger, as well as myself. And a new feature is our podcasts, which are now posted to the site. Tonight's will be up shortly. I'll spread that on social media, so check out SpeedwayReport.com for some good racing articles, reads, and podcasts of our show. Jeff Gilder, my friend, thank you for your outstanding production work tonight.
My pleasure.
Jeff and the Racers Reunion family will be back tomorrow. That's Tuesday night at 7 Eastern Time on Racing Through History, right here on Racers Reunion Radio. And don't forget, Free Pennington with Making an Impact kicks off tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern Time. Big, big thank you to Janet Guthrie for joining us tonight. Head to JanetGuthrie.com. Right on the homepage is her book. It was released several years ago. Still a great read. I intend on checking it out. JanetGuthrie.com. Check out. Just click on the book and you can order it right there. Thanks to everyone on the Racers Reunion chat rooms, both the drag site and the stock car site. Great for that picture of the legend and Janet up there tonight. That was something to see. That was pretty cool. Big reminder, the local tracks are running. They're the backbone of the sport. I don't care if it's dirt. I don't care if it's pavement. We teased Jerry about that earlier. Go see a racetrack at your local speedway this weekend. RacersReunionRadio.com handles all of our podcasts, as well as the live shows or replay for 24/7. So if you missed a show, no problem. Head to RacersReunionRadio.com and you can catch it. And I want to thank all of the military, past and present, for the freedoms we enjoy as Americans in our daily life, including the simple things like bench racing right here on a Monday night. Freedom is not free, and a veteran paid that bill for us. To all of the men and women who are defending freedom and listening to Racers Reunion Radio, take care of yourselves and come home soon. And a special salute to the teachers, school staff, firefighters, police officers, and paramedics in our own communities. They are quiet and modest heroes every single day. God bless and thank you. We send out a prayer to everyone affected by the tragedy down in Orlando. You have been listening to Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. Produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. All of our NHRA and drag racing friends that appreciate great music, stay tuned right here for Bill Pratt, John Buckelman, and Barb Santucci on Racing and Rockin' with Draglist.com. A reminder to like our Facebook page, Speedway Report, and follow me on Twitter at Speedway Pat. For Jeff Gilder, I'm Patrick Reynolds. 1 week from tonight, we will cover Formula One in Europe, NHRA in Bristol, NASCAR touring at Stafford and Thompson, and a whole lot more. Thank you all for listening. Happy Father's Day this Sunday. Good night.
Former drag racer, now operator of Roy Hill's Drag Racing School, well, Mr. Roy Hill himself. Welcome to the show, Roy.
Thank you, Patrick. I'm really excited to be on here. You guys do a wonderful job with what you do there.